The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is finally Monday, November 11th. And it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for the day. Today, I actually have Erin Green joining me, right? We haven't been working with each other for a while. And I say, we have so much things to interrogate. And I said, but Erin, I just busy, man. Today, I have a subject I wanted to talk about. I just don't know if I have time to talk about it. But I want to at least start off with it, so because I do have a guest. And this is what I want us to interrogate today, Erin, if you have a chance. Recently in the news, there was a Bohemian lady, an indigent poor lady, but Bohemian, right, who is having housing assistance by social services. In fact, she was living at the Pontiana Inn, right, for some time, for whatever time that social services was allowing her to stay, right? She's having a tough time.
In the policy.
Yeah, but I haven't reached the policy yet. She's having a tough time in terms of transitioning out of the place. Now, the policy is you stay, like you mentioned, you stay a period of time. Mm-hmm. However, you can get extensions. Mm-hmm. However, as we know, social services inundated with demand. There's a shortage of housing, mm-hmm. right? Recently, as a policy, our government has been bulldozing shanty towns. Mm-hmm. Because they have done this, right, there is now a demand for housing by these former residents of the shanty towns. A number of these residents of the former shanty towns have taken up space in the Pontiana Inn, mm-hmm. right? And the government, by government I mean social services, is doing their duty of care by making sure that these people who they have outhoused, right, created that. Yeah, say again, what word did you use?
Displaced.
Outhoused. and see, it's a pun there. Mm-hmm. The people who they have outhoused, they have a duty of care to find a space, a living quarters for these people. But conversation I will have later on, hopefully within that next half an hour, right, is do we have a duty of care? No. Do Bohemians, in this case it's Bohemian women in general, have more rights, more demand than persons who have documents, residents, mm-hmm. to live in the Bahamas, who the government has displaced, but not necessarily are Bohemians. Mm-hmm. And I frame it that way because it's a debate I've seen that's happened on social media, right? How can you do this to Bohemians for other set of people? And I want to understand the mandate. Because social services doesn't see color. Social services does not see ethnicity. Social services doesn't see Bohemian and who's not Bohemian. And I'm trying to say, no, you know what, time fine. So we're going to our guest. I see you itching to answer, Erin.
I'm not answering. I just want to stick a pin there briefly.
And just say, stick a pen, you're about to be talking.
Social services does see nationality. They have to see nationality.
They have to. See, you can cause problems on the next side of this conversation.
As a woman, the problems then cause, apparently.
Yeah.
From Eve. Because you was going to blame me. I just want you to know they all started with Eve.
If you follow instructions, you wouldn't get blamed. You're just big eye. And I'm asking, is this woman who complained, especially when she complained about her good son, is she just big eye? Demanding things that is not necessarily entitled to her because she's Bohemian.
Like you want to live in a house all the time. You ain't see what BPL say. BPL say it don't matter if you ain't getting the electricity all the time. You still going to pay for it.
She perhaps need a trolley like some people. Anyway, let's go to my guest. Today I have in studio Mr. Christopher Davis, who's a historical researcher, right? He's traveling. He's going on a big trip representing the Bahamas. And it seems that there are people in Europe who have some kind of revere for what is Bohemian stories, what we are doing on this part of the world. And Christopher Davis is now traveling to represent his institution, represent himself, of course, and the work that he's been doing, and also to represent the Bahamas by telling a narrative that these people abroad, these Europeans, I call them Europeans. I normally, if anyone know me and how flippant I'd be, I say those Conky Joe people who live in Europe, right, saw the work and said, no, we must have this work here also. We must tell this story also because your work impact us. And I said, no, it can't impact y'all because it's our things. And that's what we're going to talk about for another 20, 25 minutes. Who Christopher Davis is going to see in Europe. Why they summoned him and pay half his way to go, right, to present this work. What is this work that you're presenting? What is it that they found so fascinating that they say, you must come. And then we can pay all of this to make sure you tell the story. Because it is globally, and the key word there is globally significant that your work is being said. Welcome again, Christopher Davis.
All right, brother. Thank you. Appreciate being here. Of course, good morning to Sister Erin as well. You know, and I'm very humbled and happy, of course, that my research has made it all the way to Berlin. And those who may know, in terms of African history, Berlin belongs on the front grounds, particularly when we're talking about how they use the pen and the paper to really do in the African diaspora. You know, so Berlin is a fitting place for the first festival they're having, which is called essentially the Decolonial. It's a German word, but essentially it's the festival of decolonization. And within that, they do research on their own colonies, particularly the one that existed in present-day Ghana, southwest Ghana, Gold Coast. And for those who are already familiar with the research and all the new evidence coming out surrounding John Canoe, that is, in fact, who it centered around. So to put it in a nutshell, you know, our great hero, John Canoe the First, when he took over that fort, it was the Germans that he took it from. And he did some big-time swinging of specifically the Prussians, Brandenburg, Prussia, of which Berlin used to be the capital. And it's also, of course, the front lines of the Berlin Conference and all of these other things that bear huge significance in the history of the African diaspora.
Erin, for the listening audience, and I know you've done this before, that's why I'm bringing you in the conversation. What is decolonization, and what does that mean for the Bahamas? And I can bring back Christopher after that. I just want you to give a definition and why it's significant for Bahamians in this point in time.
Decolonization is unraveling the impact of the colonizer on enslaved peoples, right? It's unraveling it, seeing it, understanding it, and then beginning to eradicate it by shifting the way that we think about ourselves, the way we identify ourselves.
And I ask you that because why would people in Germany need to be decolonized? Why would they have a seminar based on decolonization when they are the colonizers? They were in Ghana. They were in the Gold Coast colonizing me. And I'm saying they find it socially significant that they say, man, we're going to have a whole event.
Okay, so watch
effort.
This. They were the colonizers, but you realize that for them to be the colonizers, the government, like the people in charge, had to colonize the minds of the Germans, right? To create a colonizing force, right? And so the citizens of colonizing countries are also victims of colonization. But they're not hosting it because necessarily they see themselves as having to decolonize. They're hosting it because they recognize themselves as colonizers, right?
Right.
And that they recognize that they have the capacity, the power, the resources, the money to begin the process of decolonization and to assist others in doing it. But here's another interesting thing about Germany and the Hitler experience, right?
Right.
Germans had to decolonize their minds. They had to Hitler de-Third Reich their minds. They had to understand what that experience did to them as citizens and also the people who they subjugated and unravel it.
Right.
Right. And they had a conscious effort to not be the people who they once were.
Right.
So going back to you, Chris.
Certainly.
I want to hear about the event itself. The name of the event, the time of the event, and what you'll be doing at the event, and then we'll go back to this Gardner thing.
Well, listen, one of the things I will be doing there, of course, I'll probably be giving a presentation on my research. And my research and some of the graphics that I've put together will be portrayed in the exhibits that they will have actually spread all around the city of Old Berlin. So it's actually not even like one museum. They literally have an entire section of the city that will be exhibiting all of these things, right? And to piggyback off what Aaron was saying as well, you know, German colonization, not to rank any form of colonization, because when you look at it all in its totality, it all had the same purpose, same goals, and very similar effects, you know, throughout wherever it happened, right? But in Germany, it was actually quite different. And Germany was central to that. So you had the Berlin Conference, and even the, of course, we all know about Hitler, but we don't understand what happened in the First Reich. And in the First Reich, there's an island off the coast of Namibia known as Shark Island, actually, where they have all of these old skulls. And it was an actual terrible experience. You know, these are the things that many of us don't like to speak about. But of course, this is only one aspect of our history. When we speak in specifically to colonization, which is, of course, inextricably linked to genocides globally on indigenous Americans, Asians, and of course, in this context, African people, right? Now, of course, as I was saying earlier, our hero, John Canoe, the fort that he really functioned from and took over was called, and still is called, Fort Friedrichsburg, right there in southwest Ghana in Princesstown. And he falsely, let's say, allied himself with the Prussians until he became the chief of Princesstown and started to garner his own political and military force. And it's interesting that the pretty much what we could now deem the German transatlantic slave trade essentially never took off or never continued right there in 1721, and that was largely because of John Canoe. And then they had a lot of researchers doing research over there. And much of the information coming from the German side about John Canoe, even some of it coming out of Africa about John Canoe, portrayed this sort of paternalistic attitude between the Germans and him. And of course, I rebuke that in my book and in articles that I've written and in my research and all of that stuff. And they really tagged on to my research, read it, analyzed it. I had a few conversations with them, as well as Dr. Michael Pateman, the now cultural ambassador, museumology and all of that. He'll be going to Germany too. And, you know, it's a little bit of a vetting process. But at the end of the day, it was like this eureka moment for them. And of course, they didn't, the fact that when I expounded on it and told them how this man, his name is known throughout the English-speaking African diaspora in the Western Hemisphere. In some places, it's more well-known than others, but essentially, this was something that spread and is related to a continuance of Akan militarism, whether you see it through ritual like the John Canoe commemorations in the Bahamas, of course, in Belize and in the United States, and when you see it through that Akan militarism that exuded itself politically, talking about people like Queen Nanny in Jamaica, of course, Captain Cujo in Jamaica, Kofi in Guyana, Queen Brefu in the Virgin Islands, and of course, our very own Kwamino here in the Bahamas, who in 1734 attempted a full-scale revolution.
So you're saying the Germans are researching John Canoe?
Oh, yeah. A lot of people are the Dutch, too. We've been in contact with a lot of people from Holland. And, of course, remember, I'm also representing the Ahanta Traditional Council, right, which is the ethnic group in southwest Ghana, of which John Canoe came from. That was the, quote-unquote, tribe that John Canoe, the man himself, was actually from. And the one, of course, that we have a special connection with, being that the first two slave ships that came to the Bahamas, when we became a British colony, as Sister Erin always points out, what expel pirates and restore commerce actually meant was, oh yeah, y'all black people, we can turn y'all into slaves now, and we got to do what we doing in Antigua and in Jamaica and extract as much wealth as we can from the Bahamas using African slave labor. All of this is attached to it. And of course, they are now moving away from this paternalistic outlook of John Canoe and sending a more truthful narrative. And as a matter of fact, it was great for me on the research end because it was always sort of unclear, though the evidence that I was finding was leaning towards this man not being, of course, this prolific slave trader he's portrayed to be. And coming from the German side, they tend to be in agreement with me, where he only participated in a few of these voyages. But when he actually took over and asserted his political power, he was kicking Europeans out of his lands. And of course, in some of the research I found, the only times we hear, every time we, any documentation we have of him actually speaking, he's speaking along those lines that, hey, I in charge here, and you all Europeans can't come here and take my people or occupy these forts. And that was the gist of what he was saying. And it all ties into the history of Germany. And of course, as you may know, even the early European settlers, when we first became a colony, were these Palatine Germans. Mm. So they actually had like this famine in Germany as well. And then this coincided with wars that was going on between Europe, as we know, was constant during that time, even though they like to say the Africans and the Aztecs and them were warlike and not identifying themselves as warlike, but that's a side issue. Mm-hmm. But you could see how all of these things are interconnected. And then we have names in the Bahamas like Pyfrom and Fritz, which are descended from these Palatine Germans who were then nationalized, quote unquote, as British citizens, and then were a part of these troves that came to the Americas, particularly those that came with Woodes Rogers, right? And many of them were these Palatine Germans, names like Pfeiffer, which I believe became Pyfrom, Fritz, Frith, which is still a Bahamian name, but not as common. Mm-hmm. But if you're into the family thing, you know mm-hmm. that Frith. Mm-hmm. And some believe Fritz is Frith and all these different, but all of them are attached to Germany, of course, even though that's a different section of Germany, not mm-hmm. dealing with Prussia. But you could see this huge connection between us, and it's also a slight connection to Switzerland as well.
I want to read this text, mm-hmm. and I want you to respond. In terms, right, just off of what you said,
right.
Germany is now complicit in the genocide in Gaza. They are right now suppressing the voices of those protesting against Israel's occupation and genocide. Mm-hmm. They have not changed. Look like they managed to swing y'all by throwing out a little bone. Like, I want you to respond to it, right? But I want to respond to it mm-hmm. by saying, is it just Germany? We getting ready to put mm-hmm.
right.
These
yeah.
artifacts on display.
Right. It's not just Germany, right?
Right. As if we were not victims of oppression. And right. then here we go using sacred yeah. artifacts for our own economic gain. Right. So can you...
Well, this isn't... You got to realize who is doing this. So first of all, and I was even going to respond to what CA said, you know, many of the people who involved in this project are African people who live in Germany. Mm-hmm. And I've already been in contact with many of them. Many, like all three of us in this room, are Pan-Africanists. And it would be like saying, it really don't even make no sense, because it'd be like blaming your average citizens who working against colonization, you know? And this is not a sentiment that is popular in Europe. Right. So let's get that out the way as well.
Yes.
You see a huge rise in conservatism. You know, the prime minister of Italy right now is an open Mussolini fangirl.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
understand? Like, there's this huge rise in conservatism, even racism. And you see this on every front. If women take one step forward, you can see a lot of men coming out beating their drums and all that, you know. When blacks make a step forward, you see it, this reactionary thing. And this goes all the way back from slavery. Though Nat Turner killed about 95 enslavers and their families, and almost 1,000 blacks were lynched in the aftermath, right? And people like to pretend like these things don't matter. So I don't know if the texts are misconstruing who we are or what we're doing. But I'm actually going there, and I'm also going there on a reparations initiative. Mm-hmm. So the work that I do is completely along the lines of decolonization. And as a matter of fact, in many circles, I'm called too radical and too extremist. And even just to touch on a story that relates to us, there's a great king named Badu Bantu II, who was the last independent king of the Ahanta tribe. And this man, like John Canoe and other leaders in this tribe, fought against the transatlantic slave trade. As a result, the Dutch sent a huge contingent in to capture him and murder him. And he was unfortunately beheaded, and his head was sent to Holland to do scientific research during the age of scientific racism, of course, in ways to try to prove that Africans are inferior. The hair had been missing, but it was rediscovered in 1979 in Leeman's Medical Institute in Holland, just a stone throw away from the so-called Center of International Justice, The Hague, right? And then that head was returned in 2009, and I'm still working on an initiative to have those remains returned. Me, Dr. Michael Pateman, Robin Lightborn, this is one of my main mandates since being coronated as John Canoe II. And this is another reason I'm going to be going to Europe and meeting with people that would be involved in that as well, you know. And so I share the sentiment with the texter, and I'm not into chewing up bones, but we're not going there just to take this bone and jump up and down and celebrate. This is just the beginning of a long process, and I'm glad to be a part of the process of decolonization, even all the way there in Germany, of which African people live in too. We must not forget.
Right. Mm. I would say it's so complex and nuanced, right? Like just recently, UK had elections in July. I think Conservatives lost, Tory party lost now. They just elected a new leader, right? The day before the elections, one of the candidates running for the seat, his name I think is Jerkins, said, "Dear black people, what's wrong with y'all? Y'all don't see the benefits of being enslaved by the British?
Caribbean people should be like grateful."
Come along, but right, the election ensued, and Kemi Badenoch won, the leader of the Conservative Party. Y'all going over there to talk to them? To bring them into this movement.
Oh yeah, right. And
is this a real shift?
Yeah,
or is this just some internal politics going on?
No, well, I think it's actually a mixture of the two. Remember, Germany is one of those places that are quite conservative. You see what we would deem race riots going on all over Western Europe. So the people that are doing this is not some big popular thing that, you know, you may see it on the national news in Germany, but it's not something that most of those politicians are, in fact, behind, and from what I could see. And I think that's one of the reasons why they bring in people like myself who could really speak to these issues of colonization, particularly as it regards to John Canoe, because in their historical narrative, they had this very paternalistic outlook and tried. They did it so similarly in the Hunter region to what British attempt to do in the Bahamas. Look how much better we was treating these fellas than they was treating them down the road. And, you know, because there was actually a book written by an African called John Canoe, essentially the last Prussian prince, right? And even in that title, you could see this paternalism.
Yeah.
But come to find out, when you read a lot deeper, and this man was an oppression, he was in a Hunter king. And that's who he was loyal to. And whoever got in the way of that, they was in big trouble when he was, at his zenith. Yeah.
I want to hear more about the event before you leave. When does the event start? When does it end? When do you leave?
And will there be a Zoom link?
And how were you invited? Like, when I say invited to attend, is it like a sponsored scholarship that you're going on, or your
the Garifuna and the Kalinago?
No. The name where they're saying we are going back. Anyway, I could get it. The name of the company.
Sankofa
Flamingo.
Yeah,
right.
Sankofa Flamingo sponsoring. That's what I want to know. How are you getting there?
This one actually is going to be supported by Clifton Heritage National Park.
So you go for work?
Yeah, essentially this is going to be a work trip. And of course, Clifton Heritage National Park, I always ask every school group, and it's so funny because it takes them like four or five tries to get it. When I ask them, who does this park belong to? They say, belong to me, belong to the Lucayans. And none of those answers are wrong, but the point is it belongs to all of us, right? And so I'm very happy and honored to be able to go over and, you know, represent the Bahamas on a front where for so long we've been underrepresented, right? When you talk about decolonization and Pan-Africanism, though we have so many people that have been working hard in that historian field, you know, we have many great social activists, many great economists, all of these people who've been working within that historian field, I'm very happy and grateful to be able to sort of fill that niche, right? Mm-hmm. And so Clifton, for the first time, will be covering it. And of course, there's support coming from the event organizers as well. Support coming from the Ahanta Traditional Council over there in Ghana. So essentially the chiefs and the kings of the Ahanta. And of course, shout out to our close cousins and brothers and sisters over there in Southwest Ghana.
Okay. And when is the event happening?
November 14th to the 17th. There will be a lot of links. I'll make sure to probably forward that to y'all as soon as I get them. A lot of everything is in German, and so it's a little difficult.
You're gonna take Dr. Stephen Arena with you to the conference? You know he's in Germany, right?
Oh, well, I didn't know that, but I would certainly, please make the link. Yeah, and of course, Arena is one of those Palatine German names.
I get a text here that say, your daddy is the PM. Why you don't put pressure on him to include this information in the Ministry of Youth, Ministry of Education? Curricula, right? Don't answer the question. Because you here as a civil, essentially a state actor. I'm going to tell Mr. Davis what to do is that whenever the children going to see their granddaddy, he can put them in full Ahanta gear.
Yeah.
Right? So wherever he look at his grandchildren, all he sees is these two African prince or princesses. That's the only encouragement we could give him.
Yeah. And before we go, because we're transitioning shortly, give us a summary narrative of what's happening again. Times, places, why you were invited, what the event name you're going to. Good narrative. Right. What's happening?
Well, I'm going to Germany, you know, because it's essentially been revealed. It's something that we all as Bahamians could be proud of, that in fact this festival that we celebrate, been celebrating in some way, shape, or form for over three centuries now, has so much global significance. And now it's attached, of course, to the colonial history of Germany in Africa. And they caught on to the research that we've all been doing here. And of course, the festival itself, and read my articles, read my book. And then they reached out to me, and they're going to be featuring a lot of my research and sort of recontextualizing.
What's the festival name?
The Festival of Decolonization in Berlin, November 14th to the 17th, which is the same week right here. I'll be going over there, of course, with His Excellency Dr. Michael Pateman, Ambassador of Cultural Heritage and Museums, and I think it's one or two other things in there as well.
I didn't realize Dr. Pateman is an ambassador now.
It happened a while ago now, but I think that's a good choice within that space.
Say the title again, Ambassador of Cultural Heritage?
Cultural Heritage, Museums, it's two other things on there. History, cultural heritage, museums, and there's something else in there, but I can't remember off the top of my head. But that's his role, yeah. Because you know that the celebrity artist Jamal Rule, he's moved on to UNESCO, if I understand.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, so.
So what is, I mean, I know he preempted anybody. What is Jamal Rule now? I know he's ambassador to.
Right, I think he's our official ambassador to UNESCO now.
Good for him.
And I think that the other position has been sort of refashioned to encompass more, you know, in an attempt to, you know, get our culture out there. And speaking to the comment that you made earlier, too, I know that I could personally say that a new curriculum is coming. And much of the things that have been written, not just by myself, by people like Dr. Ian Strawn and many others, it's going to be in there. We could definitely have a more truthful narrative. And one that we could certainly be proud of. And that's going to be happening through the Ministry of Education. I know when it got happened, but...
No, I know...
Right, I know it's well underway, certainly.
UB professors, yeah. Lisa Feller, and Dr. Curry,
of course.
Have been restructuring the history books for a while, and they presented and replaced what they
and several of us involved in that project, including myself. I let a little cat out of the bag. I wrote one of the longer chapters, and essentially it was about capitalism, colonization, and slavery.
Good.
And the John Canoe narrative that we always speak about is going to be included. The fact what Woodes Rogers really meant, and the fact that he was a prolific slave trader is also going to be in there. Yeah, you know, narratives on Columbus.
I know we were both lobbying for Kate Moss, poor black Kate, to be a national hero. You think we get lobbied to have John Canoe? That'd be big.
Yes,
to have,
certainly.
John Canoe be a national. See, I got to say it out loud.
Yeah.
And think of,
Listen.
You got to go now.
I ain't going to put my out there. The next time I come back, we can talk about John Canoe Square.
And hopefully we'll talk about how we need to bury our whack bones.
Oh, yeah, certainly, certainly. And we need to do it in a way that they would have done it and not let our own Judeo-Christian leanings sort of soil their dignity.
You ain't say we can turn Goodman's Bay into John Canoe Square.
No, not Goodman's Bay. We can
you
talk,
sure? Because I like Goodman's Bay.
I like Goodman's Bay, though, and because the narrative of who Goodman is. John Goodman is a good Bohemian.
That's
they
fine.
They ain't the one in mind. You know where he was from.
We need to give it a degree of importance to protect it, eh?
Certainly, certainly.
Because Goodman ain't keeping it safe.
But Goodman dead. Goodman's a good black
man. Yeah, but his name ain't keeping
Goodman
it safe.
Goodman is a good black
they
man.
They parking car on the sidewalk in the median. They tell him, who's Goodman? Go park your car by...
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Christopher. Who would... Can we put the big title again?
I'd appreciate you, bro.
Your title at work.
Assistant manager at Clifton Heritage National Park, dealing with heritage development, exhibits, and tours, and also, of course, known as Chief John Canoe, the second of the Ahanta people.
Okay, Guardian Radio, we'll be right back.
Thank you.
The Nassau Guardian is celebrating 180 years. And we want to thank you, our loyal readers, for helping to make this one of the oldest newspapers in the region. We want you to be a part of our Vision Challenge giveaway promotion beginning October 28th through November 22nd. All you need to do is find the hidden Nassau Guardian 180 years logo printed every day in the Nassau Guardian newspaper, and you could win prize money. Just purchase your daily Nassau Guardian newspaper every day beginning Monday, October 28th. Find the 180th Nassau Guardian logo, cut out the page, mark the spot, write your name and phone number on that clipping, drop off your entries at our offices on Carter Street in Oaksfield, and every Friday, November 1st, November 8th, November 15th, and November 22nd, one drawing will take place. It's that simple.
The Grand Bahama News is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. You can buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Now is the time to reach your Grand Bahama market with affordable packages, including print and digital. Call GB News sales representative Kavondre at 822-6717 or message him on WhatsApp for ad rates. Classified ads are now available every Tuesday as well. Keep up with everything Grand Bahamian every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian.
Get ready to indulge in the freshest seafood in town. The Seafood Bistro is now open at East Street South. From juicy lobster tails to crispy conch and delicious snapper, our menu has something for everyone. Don't miss out on our irresistible flavors that will leave you craving more.
Visit us today at East Street South Super Value Plaza.
And let us take your taste buds on an unforgettable journey.
For more information, call 1-242-802-8800.
I been up at Pinda and I meet him in his showroom. I say, Pinda, I just come out of a showroom in Portugal and let me tell you something, them showroom and selection ain't got nothing on yours. Man, I like this stock of porcelain, this ceramic tile you got here. What I really like is the range of sizes that come in, 8x48, 12x24, 24x24, and what I really, really like, more than the things I really like, is the price. From $275 a square foot to $494 a square foot and all in between, you can't beat that. Not even with a 2x4 from Enterprises.
For fast, reliable, and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that are second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back to Guardian Radio Air. Welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. Of course, this is C.A. Nuri, and I want to continue my conversation that we started with initially. We have a Bahamian lady, born and bred, full-bred Bahamian, who's being kicked out. Social services said, I know you need help, but we don't have the resources at this present time. We have a large demand, and we give you enough time to transition, and you didn't make the effort to transition or was unable to transition, but we need the space. And they made some tough decisions. And one of the tough decisions is that she had to be ushered on, right? The problem with the narrative is why she was ushered on. She's ushered on because there was of the huge demand, which came about. It's always had a demand, of course, which came about because our government has bulldozed a number of, what do you call them?
Unregulated housing.
I appreciate it because you're always politically correct. I just call them shanty towns, but she always corrected me. They're not shanty towns. They are, say the word again.
Unregulated communities. I mean, because, right? Let's not use the word shanty town, because if you use the word shanty town, you would forget that we have places like Lyford Key that are also unregulated building communities.
They ain't really like a shanty, though.
That's why we don't use the word, right? Because then you would forget that Nygaard and Bacon were involved in a shanty town row.
Yes. But you are correct. Because we bulldozed the unregulated communities, mm-hmm. those people who were living in unregulated communities needed to find a place. Part of social services mandate was that they will assist these people. Mm-hmm. Our government did that. They assisted these people.
How?
I'm getting there.
Okay.
Let me say, these people have documents to be in the Bahamas. They're not necessarily Bahamians.
But they're documented migrants.
These are documented migrants, and one or two of them might be Bahamians in terms of citizenship or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. The problem is, because of the large demand, a number of Bahamians who were there, one or two of them women, Bahamian women, mm-hmm. generations of being in the Bahamas, mm-hmm. Were asked to move on, mm-hmm. right? And the question is that fair for Bahamians? Do social services have a mandate to make sure that Bahamians come first? Generation Bahamians come first before people who came here for the last 20 years, last 10 years, and got permits and whatever it is. Should there be an outcry by women's group, outcry by nationalist group, to say, I understand your mandate, no, but you can't put out no Bahamian.
It's too late for an outcry.
It's too late for an outcry.
The outcry should have occurred when the government announced that they were demolishing unregulated communities and didn't publish simultaneously their housing initiative for the people who would be displaced from said homes. That's when the outcry should have occurred. We knew there was going to be a problem then when you announced over and over again that you were demolishing these spaces, but you did not provide for the public, for the people who live in those spaces, alternates, regulated housing, legal housing, where they could go and seek access to housing. They still have to pay rent, right? They still have to take care of all of the things that go along with renting. But the state has a duty of care. The outcry now is too late.
My question is, paint a scenario. I have the B graphic.
Hold on. So
explain it. Give me a second, Aaron, mm-hmm. just to explain it. A number of people who were housed by social services
mm-hmm.
are migrants.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to call it that. They are migrants. These people supposed to find housing via their jobs. And their jobs
the employers,
did not, employers.
The work permit is supposed to be dependent on provision and proof of provision of adequate legal housing.
And apparently that did not happen. And if it did not happen, one would assume that their permits would be revoked and they'd be sent home. But instead of being sent home, we now our social services have now found a place for migrant workers who are supposed to have a place by their employers. And now they're displacing Bahamians. I want to know, should Bahamians be alarmed, incensed,
But Bahamians,
about what is happening?
Bahamians should be alarmed and they should be incensed about what is happening, but they should not direct that frustration and alarm at the migrant.
Well, I appreciate that.
Direct it at the administration through its dereliction of duty has created not only an administrative crisis, but they sit in the midst of a housing crisis and have not produced a lick of affordable housing options, but sit back and demand that Bahamians consider opening their homes to tourists. Demand that Bahamians support the tourism product by making housing available for tourists, because we just realize that when tourists come and they go into a hotel, they're the hotel's. When tourists come on a cruise ship, they're the cruise ship's guests, right?
You mentioned housing. I've just sent you a link that I want you to read, and hopefully you'll be able to see that, right? It's a statement from the Prime Minister, Prime Minister Davis on the review of the University of the Bahamas Cost of Living Report. It's on November 7th, the statement came out. After all the criticism, an official statement of what the government plans to do to lower cost of living has been tabled
right.
for the public.
So the article, Middle Class Families Need $10,000 a Month, came out on the 4th of November. The article with the PM says cost of living determined by one's choices, 7th of November. And after the Prime Minister made that sideline commentary, mm-hmm. the OPM released a statement yes. on the 7th of November.
It's an 8-point plan on what the government is currently doing to reduce cost of living. It's an empathy-oriented response, and it's because people was concerned that it seemed as if the Prime Minister didn't care about lowering the cost of living. And this is proof, I assume. And I wanted to read, because a number of people missed it. And I want people to hear.
What do you mean missed it? You mean this statement?
The statement altogether. You know, they put it on social media. They don't put it on the news.
Let's just make this point right here.
Go ahead.
If anybody in government thinks they're doing a good job, let me explain something to you.
Mm-hmm.
Social media is not your primary source of information.
What do you mean it's not our primary?
You need to have a functioning government website, and each ministry needs to have its own functioning government website. Social media is not your primary source of access for information. Mm-hmm. TikTok?
TikTok is not it?
No. No, why would I expect to go? First of all, I don't need social media to be a Bahamian, to pay taxes. I see the time.
Mm.
With this whole public service week, last week in the parade, and people talking about it was public notice. Hey, public notice, I don't need no social media. You'll have to be out of your minds to think that this is professional. That you could post important public notice on TikTok and Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter, X, and Facebook, and people supposed to...
Now, I want us to read on the record so people would be aware of what our government... Because I may have to talk about this again tomorrow.
Well, I plan on talking about it tomorrow.
Okay. So let's go read that. Go ahead.
statement from Prime Minister Davis on the review of the University of the Bahamas' cost of living report. The Office of the Prime Minister is currently reviewing a recent report by the University of the Bahamas highlighting the challenges Bahamians face with the rising cost of living. These challenges are not new. They are deeply rooted in long-standing structural issues in our economy that have been building over many years. From limited competition in essential industries, I guess that's like energy, hey, to high shipping costs, I guess that's like monopolized sectors and a housing market affected by high demand from vacation rentals. The cost of living has remained persistently high in the Bahamas. In fact, the Bahamas ranks among the top six most expensive places in the world, a reflection of these entrenched issues. Full stop. I feel the need to say this now, Mr. Newry, that our economy apparently, and I believe the stats have been, has been steadily growing at a very small, minute pace, but has been steadily growing over decades. You know what does exist in our community that is causing this economic crisis? Mm-hmm. It is the shrinkage of the black and gray economy input, right? The drug money, the numbers money, the financial services money. That's where the loss is. We continue. Monopolies and a lack of competition in key areas mean that Bahamians often have limited choices and pay higher prices for goods and services.
And hopefully we are able to analyze or put into the record what are these monopolies, because they didn't identify who they were. Go ahead.
There you go. Additionally, the growth of the short-term rental market has squeezed rental inventory, making it more challenging and costly for Bahamians to find affordable housing.
And of course, we've been saying that for a while for rental units, Bob. Our government has yet to produce any rental units.
Or any reform, any strategy, any real substantive discussion. Mm-hmm. These structural issues require a committed approach, not just for short-term relief, but for long-term lasting change. That's why, building on the work we've already started, the Davis administration is moving forward with bold actions to tackle these issues head-on.
Okay.
So colorful, the language. This government is committed to building a fairer, more competitive economy that puts Bahamians first. Here's what we're doing to address these challenges.
One.
Addressing the lack of competition.
What does that mean?
Frankie Wilson can't own nothing else.
You know they ain't talking about the ambassador.
He's an ambassador too?
I might say something wrong. No, go ahead. I might be the wrong person. Go ahead.
We are taking active steps to break down barriers and increase competition within monopolized sectors. See, some people think that because we don't know their names, that we don't know that they are part of these entities. But the, what they call it, the Beneficial Owners Act?
See, look, my cost of living expenses is food store food, which has oil competition, so I'm not sure if they mean in that, right? Because there's one food store, which is the majority of us go to. And of course, maintenance of my house. There's a number of places that does that too. So I'm not sure who. What exactly is this monopoly place they're talking about? Go ahead, quickly.
By encouraging a more competitive environment, we aim to give Bahamians more choices and lower prices. Trade diversification and working with Bahamian businesses, especially in logistics, are priorities as we build a stronger economy. They don't mean JDLA. When you say logistics, that's the only thing I could think of. That's what the L mean, right?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to go through the points quickly. 2, increasing consumer protection. 3, putting money back in Bahamian pockets. 4, energy sector reforms to reduce costs. 5.
We need time to analyze each one, but it's cool. Go ahead.
5, support for families and students. 6, expanding local food production. 7, increasing access to affordable housing. 8, trade diversification and partnerships.
When they say affordable housing, they mean these low-cost homes, right?
No, of course not.
So what do they mean?
Let's just stick on that. They don't mean that, because we know that when Elizabeth Estates was created,
yeah,
with the low-cost housing program,
yeah,
they didn't lower the cost of the house. Mm-hmm. They lowered the criteria required to get a mortgage, the same mortgage.
So... Yeah, we can talk about this again. Go ahead.
No, that's all 8.
All 8. So I want to know what this low-cost housing they're talking about, because we need a demand. There's a huge demand
for
rental units.
So let me read it, because they didn't say anything about low-cost housing. They said increasing access to affordable housing.
See?
The rising cost of housing has been a significant burden on Bahamian families.
A burden is rental units.
Particularly with the impact of the short-term rental market on available housing. We are actively expanding access to affordable housing, ensuring that Bahamians can find secure, stable homes at fair prices. How? How are you doing that? Are we going to have rent control? Are you going to regulate rent? Is that what you're going to do?
I see some insincerity there. That's my point.
I see some Is flam?
Because nobody building no apartments.
Is flam an acceptable word on the radio? You know? I don't mean flammable.
No, I
don't mean that at all. I mean like sham, like flam and sham.
I'm concerned.
Rhyme.
Go ahead, read another one there for me. I had issues with.
Okay, expanding local food production. To ease food prices, we're investing in local agriculture to decrease our reliance on imports and reduce food costs. By boosting local food production, we're also creating jobs and increasing food security, making our economy less vulnerable to global disruptions.
And food security is different from cost of living, because the foreign thing would still be cheaper. The idea is I can't afford the local food without increasing my income. It's going to be a problem.
They spent all this time writing this paragraph?
Yeah, man. Sorry.
Listen, you know what my teacher used to tell me when I write stuff like this?
Yeah, what did he say?
You use a whole lot of words to say nothing.
There's a lot of words there.
Beautiful words.
It was beautiful crafted.
Yeah. Yeah,
and more behemoths need to get access to this and read it and start asking questions. What is the government response to the increase of cost?
You can find this by going to the OPM's page and just searching the press room.
Yes. This has been Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Thank you very much, Aaron. I have a guest again tomorrow, but I'll take it up again on my second half of the show.
Yeah, I'm going to start it in my half.
Okay, have a wonderful day.
Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.